Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Why are so many Republicans embracing quack science? That's the title of my op-ed today at HartmanReport.com. Just a couple of recent examples. Rand Paul was shocked this week when he asked the CEO of Moderna if more people got heart inflammation, I guess is what it is, pericarditis, the lining of the heart, the sac that surrounds the heart. If more people got that from the vaccines than from COVID, thinking that he was going to get this guy to confess, right? And the president of Moderna said, no, you're more likely to get heart inflammation from COVID than from the vaccines. And Rand Paul was just shocked. Republicans in Missouri just passed legislation outlawing an employer's ability to fire workers who refuse to take a vaccine. Republicans in a dozen state legislatures so far have put forward licensing legislation around medical boards, preventing medical licensing boards from punishing doctors or nurses who prescribe hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin for COVID. In fact, this is now the law in North Dakota and Tennessee that you may not pull a doctor's license if somebody presents with COVID and they give them ivermectin. In Florida, Ron DeSantis hired a medical school graduate who needed certification and had aligned himself with America's frontline doctors, this quack group of actual physicians, including Dr. Stella Emanuel, who says that endometrial bleeding is caused by women having sex with demons in their dreams. DeSantis got this guy his certification in 2 days. This is a process that normally takes 6 months, and then made him Florida Surgeon General. And now he's out there trash-talking vaccines and harassing the FDA. Given all this bizarre behavior, you have to ask the question, why are Republicans so into junk science? Why are they killing themselves with ivermectin? Why did they die? Why did Republicans in America die from COVID at twice the rate of Democrats over the last 3 years and continue to die of COVID at higher rates than Democrats? Why is this happening? I ask these as serious questions, and I think I have, out of my own life experience, an actual serious answer. When I was 19 years old, I got a job as a manager of a general nutrition store, GNC store, in Okemos, Michigan, at the mall in Okemos, Michigan. And this was back when GNC was all about vitamins and herbs and stuff, not when they got into weightlifting and weight loss, which is pretty much their main topic nowadays. And I was fascinated by this idea. I mean, this was relatively new to me. My mom had been a big fan of Adele Davis, but still, that any ordinary person like myself could take control of his own health, could prevent disease, could even deal with diseases that doctors found problematic. When I was 15, I'd become a vegetarian in opposition to the war in Vietnam, and because I took transcendental meditation initiation that year. And that led to me studying herbs and herbology and all this kind of stuff. And in fact, we started an herbal tea company that made us a pretty good living for a couple of years. But, you know, and at that time, I can understand Republicans who don't trust government, because when I was 19, I didn't trust government either. I mean, you know, the Richard Nixon was trying to kill us with the Vietnam War. He killed 50,000 of my colleagues, of people in my age cohort. And I had watched our SDS group at Michigan State University get infiltrated by the state police and by the FBI. So I didn't trust my own government. So taking control of my own health through taking vitamins and herbs and things seemed like a way to strike out against the man, and including the healthcare industry that seemed mostly bent on just making money. Plus, you know, there was this idea, this whole alternative medicine idea, that we had secret knowledge that the powers that be didn't want us to know. And, you know, I still drink herbal tea and I still take a bunch of supplements every day, but long ago I left behind homeopathy and the idea that I can do a better job than my doctor when it comes to my own health. But I totally understand where Daniel Lemoy was coming from when he was frustrated in 2012 by the inability of modern medicine to cure him of Lyme disease. Back in the day, Louise and I had read Arnold Arendt's book from the 1920s. It's called The Mucusless Diet Healing System, which suggested that all disease was caused by mucus, and mucus was coming from eating, you know, dairy products. And, you know, in fact, we took dairy products out of our diet. But Daniel Lemoy had a similar perspective around disease, although his was colored by his Lyme diagnosis. Lyme is caused by a parasite, of course, that you'd typically get from a tick bite. And, you know, by the time the COVID pandemic had hit America, Daniel Lemoy had concluded that all disease was caused by parasites in the body, and therefore all disease could be cured with ivermectin, which is a pesticide that kills parasites. So, you know, I mean, if you assume mucus causes all disease, you stop eating mucus. If you believe parasites cause all disease, you take ivermectin, right? And, you know, he was like a star in the Lyme disease community, but when the pandemic hit and people started talking about ivermectin for COVID, suddenly this guy became a major influencer. I mean, he had hundreds of thousands of followers on his Telegram channel. And the day that he died, earlier in the month, I believe it was, he posted on his Telegram channel, "Happy Friday, all you poisonous horse paste eating survivors." And 1 hour later, he was dead from apparently a side effect of this drug, of ivermectin, which his heart was about twice the size it should have been. So, you know, his followers don't seem to be falling away. They're starting to get a little more concerned about their side effects, but they still are convinced that disease is caused by parasites and that ivermectin kills parasites, which it does. And but the problem is that to amplify this tragedy, you've got media that wants to make money off clicks and eyeballs, and politicians who are perfectly willing to see people get sick if it means more votes. And out of that, they're continuing to promote these quack cures. I mean, this is really problematic. I've got some audio here from my computer, Sean, if we can play this. This is from Fox News. This is Marita Bartiromo and Rand Paul. Check this out.
Well, there were also all these lies around the emergency authorization. They needed the emergency authorization to get the vaccines down everybody's throats. But in order to do that, they had to prove that there was nothing else on the market that could actually treat COVID. When we all know ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine were effective, weren't they?
Well, we also know that prior infection is effective.
Good point.
It's at least as effective as the vaccine.
Right.
That's Marita Bartiromo and Rand Paul. Last week, this kind of stuff is literally still going on. And, you know, I mean, I would say the hundreds of thousands of Daniel Lemoy's followers can be forgiven their enthusiasm for this forbidden knowledge and their hope and belief that they've stumbled on the cure to diseases from Lyme disease to COVID to cancer. They, like Lemoy, who is a heavy equipment operator, have no medical training and no background in this, and they're often desperate people. But the Republican politicians and the Republican-aligned media that continue to push these baseless and dangerous quack cures, they deserve no forgiveness whatsoever. They fully know what they're doing, and they know its consequences, and they know it's killing people, and they're still doing it. Instead of being in Congress or on TV, in my opinion, these people should be in court answering for the deaths and the destroyed families that they've caused in their quest for political power and advertising dollars. What say you? A couple of other quick stories here, and then I'll pick up your phone calls. Thanks, Obama. The hilarious reason why a judge just blocked Wyoming's abortion ban. This from Ian Millhiser, who's been a guest on this program many, many times over the years. On Wednesday, a judge in Wyoming blocked that state's abortion ban. Now, the story behind this is just incredible. Back in the day, back when President Obama was president, and I think it was in 2010, as I recall, when he was trying to push Obamacare, the Affordable Care Act, through Congress, and you had people like Sarah Palin saying just absolutely bizarre stuff. I mean, you know, she said, my baby with Down syndrome, Obama wants to make him stand in front of one of Obama's death panels so his bureaucrats can decide, based on a subjective judgment of their level of productivity in society, whether they're worthy of health care. Now, this was a complete lie. Right? But coming from Sarah Palin, which she's a Republican. What do you expect? But what it did, what that kind of rhetoric did, the whole death panels rhetoric, is it caused a number of states, a half a dozen Republican states, to actually amend their constitutions to say that because, you know, if the federal government is going to come and force you into a health care system, you can still make a choice in our state. You can choose the health care you want. And so in Wyoming, they actually wrote this into the Constitution that, quote, each competent adult shall have the right to make his or her own health care decisions. That's now in the Constitution. And they thought they were like giving the middle finger to Obama, right? That they were going to stand against the tyranny of Obamacare. Well, the judge looked at that and said, oh, each adult shall have the right to make his or her own health care decisions? Okay, then women have the right to get an abortion here in Wyoming. And this is after they just passed a near total ban on abortion. We'll see what happens when this gets. This was a state judge. This is going to go to the state Supreme Court, which is dominated by right-wing crazy Republicans. But we'll see where this goes and how it goes. The last story I wanted to share with you very quickly is the governor of Utah, Spencer Cox, just signed two laws into being yesterday. That require age verification for anyone using social media. You must be over 18, and if you're under 18, you can't use social media, or they have to block your access between 10:30 p.m. and 6:30 a.m. Now, there's going to be a million lawsuits around this thing. It doesn't take effect until March of next year, so there's plenty of time to work this out. But Arkansas, Texas, Ohio, Louisiana, and New Jersey, a blue state, are looking at similar proposals, and California has already put into law a law requiring tech companies to put kids' safety first, although it's a little weaker. This Utah law, this is fascinating. So I just want to put that on your radar screen. I am personally of the opinion, and this is why I wrote The Hidden History of Big Brother in America, how the death of privacy and the rise of surveillance threaten us in our democracy. I'm of the opinion that social media, this is like artificial intelligence on steroids. Artificial intelligence-driven algorithms are making our children mentally ill. And that's not, you know, some wild assertion. That's backed up by good research, by actual science. There's like just incredible levels of damage being done to particularly girls, preteen and teenage girls. By these social media algorithms. And it's unregulated. And it needs to be regulated, frankly, in my opinion. So, anyhow, let's pick up your calls today. Charles in Warren, Indiana. Am I saying that right, Charles?
That would be Warren with an N.
Warren, okay. So what's up, Charles?
Good to talk to you, Tom. I've been listening to you for years, and you do a wonderful job.
Thank you.
I just want to make a quick comment about the mucus potentially causing disease. Since being in the dairy industry for so many years as a former plant manager of a dairy, retired now, and that's why I can speak freely. Mm-hmm. But I just think that it's not so much the mucus but maybe getting it from a different species of animal.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking your mother's milk, no problem. As soon as you start consuming another species, then that's when the problems start.
Right, and we're the only species on Earth that does this, that does interspecies milk drinking.
Yeah, I think when we had a hand and we were able to grab an udder, that's when the problem started.
Yeah. But I can tell you, I've noticed, Charles, like, you know, every now and then, we'll get a pizza or we'll be out with other people or, you know, whatever. I'll end up eating some cheese. And Sean can testify. I mean, we've been working together for 15 years. And every time I am coughing and clearing my throat on the air, it's because I ate cheese the day before. It happens maybe 6 or 7 times a year to me. And I can turn it on and off like a light switch. If I went out this afternoon and ate a pizza that had dairy cheese on it, the pizzas I get nowadays are all plant-based cheeses, but that had dairy-based cheese on it, tomorrow morning I will have mucus in my throat and in my lungs, in fact. It's remarkable.
Absolutely. Yeah, I have same issues with health issues, and that's probably why I'm bringing it to the attention of others. But
yeah
absolutely. Maybe plant-based cheese is, just not going through the same processes. So.
Plant-based cheese doesn't do it to me, and I'm guessing it's because the fats are short-chain fatty acids instead of long-chain fatty acids. But that's an uninformed and uneducated speculation. It's pretty amazing to me how easily I can turn it on and off. Now, I don't subscribe to Arnold Arendt's theory that, mucus is the cause of all disease, but it sure does appear to me that mucus is the cause of mucus.
Absolutely.
It's getting kind of gross here, but that's what it is. All righty, Charles, I got to run, but thank you for the call. It's good to hear from you. Jay in Denver, Colorado. Hey, Jay, what's on your mind today?
2 or 3 weeks ago, you mentioned something about this meditation technique you were using.
Mm-hmm. It's called mindfulness,
Yeah, I was looking for a newsletter, and I didn't see it, but maybe I missed it. Hey, I want to tell you, I've been doing that, and it's really been helpful for me. I'm the kind of person that wakes up in the middle of the night, and my brain decides it has to recall all the bad decisions I've ever made.
Yeah, it's called rumination. So, it haunts us all.
Yeah, so I started using the technique you described, and, kind of visualizing, pushing away, and just... I'm thinking, and it's amazing how quiet your mind gets.
Yeah. After just a very small amount of practice, this technique of just sitting there quietly and as thoughts bubble up, you just kind of touch them like you're touching a bubble and say, thinking, and poof, off they go. And then another one comes along, thinking, poof, off it goes. And pretty soon they slow down and they get less hysterical and the little voice stops being so squeaky and things get better.
Yeah, what do you call it again? What's the term?
It's called mindfulness meditation, and there are entire websites devoted to it. There's been books written about it. It's a variation on a practice that, in fact, when the Dalai Lama invited us to India to visit his home, he gave a little talk on meditation, and he talked about this very specific technique, in fact. It's kind of, it's trans, you'll find variations of it in every religion.
So isn't it kind of like a term called monkey mind, where your mind just kind of races off and trying to settle there?
Yeah. In Hinduism, they talk about it in that context, and this is the way of calming the monkey mind or setting it aside so it doesn't control you. And the other piece of it is to be present, to be here now. We spend most of our lives either worrying about the future, imagining future outcomes, and then looking at those imagined pictures and scaring the hell out of ourselves, or remembering all the terrible things we've done in our lives and making ourselves feel shame and guilt. And as a result of those two kind of wastes of time, we don't spend a lot of time just sitting here present. And the best way that I've found to bring yourself to this moment, and this was, again, something that I learned sitting with the Dalai Lama, is to just go through your senses, just cycle through the 5 senses, or really 6. Notice what you see, and just notice it. Pay attention. I'm here in this room, and here's the colors and the brightness. And then notice what you hear. Here's the sound I hear. Here's the sound I hear inside my own head. Here's, the kind of, that's always there, the little bit of rush. Here's what I feel. I feel the sensation of my butt on the chair and my shirt on my back. Here's what I'm tasting. I still can taste the coffee I tasted a little bit ago. Here's what I'm smelling. I can smell the room. And then the sixth sense that he added when we were talking was your sense of balance. I'm vertical relative to the rest of the room. I'm in my, you know, here I am relative to the world in terms of balance. And then go back and repeat it. Back to what I see, what I hear, what I feel, what I taste, what I smell, you know, how I am relative to the world, balance. That's really a sixth sense, and it's the sensory organ is the inside of your inner ear, behind the cochlea. What's it called? Maybe it is the cochlea, the little part that's shaped like a snail shell, and it's got all those little tiny hairs in it, and I forget the name of them, and that helps us stay balanced, and so just cycling through those. In fact, Milton Erickson, the famous hypnotist, said that his wife used to do that three times before going to sleep. He called it the Betty technique. Her name was Betty Erickson. She would do that three times before she went to sleep, and it always got her right off to sleep. And I do that frequently when I wake up in the middle of the night and my mind is racing. And so I'll just bring myself to being in my body in this moment by just cycling through the senses, because it works really well. Jay, thank you for the acknowledgement. Was there a question in there?
No, I just wanted to call and tell you thank you that okay. I found that it worked. Have a great day, Tom.
Cool. Thank you, Jay. You too. Rick in Carlton, Michigan. Hey, Rick, what's on your mind today?
I just discovered you on Free Speech TV because I got tired of running to my car to listen to you after listening to you for over 12 years now. Well, but anyways, you. I'm in Florida now.
Uh-huh.
About every other thing on TV is about Medicare Advantage. And they are now down here, they're offering even groceries. If you take the Medicare Advantage program,
right.
You can get eye care, dental care, and groceries.
Right. They're giving away stuff to get you locked into the system. And after you've been in it a year, it's almost impossible to go back to regular Medicare. And then once you get really sick, all of a sudden you're going to discover that they're going to refuse to pay your doctors or refuse to authorize treatment or refuse to authorize tests.
Yeah, I'm well aware of all of that. In fact, I've got your book and I've shared it with people in my family, but it's just crazy that I just can't believe that people in Congress can't do something about this. It's almost like they're, well, I know they're getting money from
it's an industry that is literally making $1 billion a month in profit. And so spending a few million dollars to buy some politicians, that's chump change. That's no big deal. That's not a problem.
Right.
And so that's what's going on. And it's going to take, you know, our politicians, you've got, you know, the progressives are with Ro Khanna and Mark Pocan, but there's still a lot of Democrats who are taking money from these people and the entire Republican Party. So it's going to take people.
They all eat out of the same trough.
Yeah, It's going to take we the people, Rick, to rise up and do something about this. Rick, thank you for the call.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This, frankly, should be one of the issues that you ask about when you are considering voting, is whether your representative supports Medicare Advantage.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Our book today in the Tom Hartman Book Club is Stolen Focus by Johann Hari. The subtitle, Why You Can't Pay Attention and How to Think Deeply Again. This is from the introduction titled Walking in Memphis. When he was 9 years old, my godson developed a brief but freakishly intense obsession with Elvis Presley. He took to singing Jailhouse Rock at the top of his voice with all the low crooning and pelvis jiggling of the king himself. He didn't know this style had become a joke, so he offered it with all the heart-catching sincerity of a preteen who believes he's being cool. In the brief pauses before he started singing it all over again, he demanded to know everything about Elvis. And so I jabbered out the rough outline of that inspiring, sad, stupid story. Elvis was born in one of the poorest towns in Mississippi, a place far, far away, I said. He arrived in the world alongside his twin brother, who died a few minutes later. As he grew up, his mother told him that if he sang to the moon every night, his brother could hear his voice. So he sang and sang. He began to perform in public just as television was taking off. So in a sudden swoosh, he became more famous than anyone had ever before been. Everywhere Elvis went, people would scream until his world became a chamber of screams. He retreated into a cocoon of his own construction where he gloried in his possessions in place of his lost freedom. For his mother, he bought a palace and named it Graceland. I skimmed through the rest, the descent into addiction, the sweating, gurning stage jammering in Vegas, the death at the age of 42. Whenever my godson, who I'll call Adam, I've changed some details here to avoid identifying him, asked questions about how the story ended, I got him to duet Blue Moon with me instead. You saw me standing alone, he sang in his little voice, without a dream in my heart, without a love of my own. One day, Adam looked at me very earnestly and asked, Johann, will you take me to Graceland one day? Without really thinking, I agreed. Do you promise? Do you really promise? I said I did. And I never gave it another thought until everything had gone wrong. 10 years later, Adam was lost. He had dropped out of school when he was 15, and he spent literally almost all his waking hours at home, alternating blankly between screens. His phone, an infinite scroll of WhatsApp and Facebook messages, and his iPad on which he watched a blur of YouTube and porn. At moments, I could still see in him traces of the joyful little boy who sang Viva Las Vegas, but it was like that person had broken into smaller, disconnected fragments. He struggled to stay with the topic of conversation for more than a few minutes without jerking back to his screen or abruptly switching to another topic. He seemed to be whirring at the speed of Snapchat, somewhere where nothing still or serious could reach him. He was intelligent, decent, kind, but it was like nothing could gain any traction in his mind. During the decade in which Adam had become a man, this fracturing seemed to be happening to some degree to many of us. The sensation of being alive in the early 21st century consisted of the sense that our ability to pay attention, to focus, was cracking and breaking. I could feel it happening to me. I'd buy piles of books and I'd glimpse them guiltily from the corner of my eye as I told myself, just one more tweet. I still read a lot, but with each year that passed, it felt more and more like running up a down escalator. I had just turned 40, and wherever my generation gathered, we would lament our lost capacity for concentration, as if it was a friend who had vanished one day at sea and never been seen since. Then one evening, as we lay on a large sofa, each staring at our own ceaselessly shrieking screens, I looked at Adam and felt a low dread. We can't live like this, I said to myself. Adam, I said softly, let's go to Graceland. What? I reminded him of the promise that I had made to him so many years before. He couldn't even remember those blue moon days, nor my pledge to him. But I could see that the idea of breaking this numbing routine ignited something in him. He looked up at me and asked if I was serious. I am, I said, but there's one condition. I'll pay for us to go 4,000 miles. We'll go to Memphis and New Orleans. We'll go all over the South, anywhere you want. But I can't do it if when we get there, all you're going to do is stare at your phone. You have to promise to leave it switched off except at night. We have to return to reality. We have to connect with something that matters to us. He swore he would, and a few weeks later, we lifted off from London Heathrow toward the land of the Delta Blues. When you arrive at the gates of Graceland, there's no longer a human being whose job is to show you around. You're handed an iPad, and you put in little earbuds, and the iPad tells you what to do. Turn left, turn right, walk forward. In each room, the iPad, in the voice of some forgotten actor, tells you about the room you're in, and a photograph of it appears on the screen. So we walked around Graceland alone, staring at the iPad. We were surrounded by Canadians and Koreans and the whole United Nations of blank-faced people looking down, seeing nothing around them. I watched them as they walk, feeling more and more tense. Occasionally, somebody would look away from the iPad, and I felt a flicker of hope, and I'd try to make eye contact with them to shrug, to say, hey, we're the only ones looking around. We're the ones who traveled thousands of miles. The book Stolen Focus by Johann Hari. And welcome back. A couple of stories here I did want to share with you. The first is this question, Ed Pilkington writing at The Guardian, who guards the guards, essentially? Can the Supreme Court be trusted to police itself, is the question that Ed is asking. And apparently the answer is no. I mean, here we have, for example, last July, Sam Alito was flown in grand style, you know, the top of the line airfare. In fact, I'm not even sure it might have been a private jet, over to Italy, where he gave a keynote speech at a gala dinner held in the splendor of the Palazzo Colonna in Rome. Now, it turns out this trip was paid for by the Religious Liberty Initiative. The Religious Liberty Initiative filed two of the briefs in the Dobbs decision against abortion. I mean, this is how bad this has gotten. They've also filed amicus briefs with the Supreme Court in at least six other high-profile cases since this organization was started in 2020, apparently with the goal of lobbying the Supreme Court. I mean, Gabe Roth, who's the executive director of Fix the Court, he said, it's one thing for justices to speak at law schools, but when the Religious Liberty Initiative, which is filing amicus briefs in all sorts of Supreme Court cases, flies Alito out to Rome, that's another thing entirely. And then you got Clarence Thomas, who not only refused to recuse himself, but was the lone vote saying that Donald Trump shouldn't have to turn his documents and stolen information over to the Department of Justice. He's the only justice who sided with Trump. And he's also the only justice whose wife was working to overturn our elections. And then, of course, you know, last month, the American Bar Association called on the justices to take on this full sweep of ethical rules, arguing in their resolution that the lack of such a code, quote, imperils the legitimacy of the court. As Alexander Hamilton pointed out, the Supreme Court has neither guns, they don't control the power of the police, which is the executive branch, and they don't control the power of the purse, which is the legislative branch. They rely on public trust, basically. And public trust in the court is below 40% right now. Senator Chris Murphy has introduced the Supreme Court Ethics Act that would close what the Senate Majority Leader Dick Durbin called an inexcusable loophole. And that is that the court, there is a federal code of ethics, and there is a law, actually, that says that any federal judge has to recuse themselves if their spouse is involved in something. And Clarence Thomas defied this. And the problem is that Clarence Thomas broke the law, but there is no mechanism to enforce that law on the Supreme Court outside of impeachment by the Senate, which is not going to happen. The House and the Senate, actually. So what do we do? I think that Congress really needs to pass some legislation. We've got, you know, the abortion decision. You've got the Supreme Court has sided with the fossil fuel companies on the climate crisis. They've sided with the gun companies, gun manufacturers on gun laws. They've sided with right-wing religious freaks on religion in public life. They're looking at voting rights now in this term, affirmative action, Biden's plan to forgive student debt. I mean, there's a bunch of areas here where these nine justices are just, you know, going way off the edge. And frankly, I think it's wrong. So the other thing I wanted to share with you real quickly is Medicare, the Medicare Advantage industry. This industry has stolen billions of dollars from us through a process called upcoding, which is where they claim to the federal government that you are sicker than you actually are. And that causes the government to reimburse them for more money than they actually need. And this is why Medicare Advantage costs about 4% more than real Medicare. It's not because real Medicare is providing fewer services. Medicare Advantage actually provides fewer services. It's because they're ripping us off. And the Biden administration has put forth proposed rules through the Center for Medicare Services that would end this ability of these health insurance companies to lie about how sick you are, this upcoding thing. And what's happened in response to this? Executives, including the CEO of, apparently, of according to this report from Common Dreams by Jake Johnson, the CEO of one of the biggest companies in the world, one of the biggest insurance companies, personally lobbying members of Congress. I mean, this is just breathtaking or jaw-dropping. Somebody said, you know, breathtaking sounds good. No, it, I get it. This proposed crackdown, this would have saved us $4.7 billion that right now is going into the pockets of executives in these insurance companies. And instead, you know, number one, I've been saying this for a long time, and Ro Khanna and Mark Pocan have made legislation to this effect. Medicare Advantage should not be able to call itself Medicare, number one. But number two, you know, we need to do this. But these guys are smearing money around. They're spreading money around Washington, D.C. like there's no tomorrow. And it is having an impact. Plus, they're starting to run ads claiming that the Biden administration wants to cut Medicare, when in fact, they're trying to strengthen Medicare by preventing Medicare Advantage insurance companies from ripping us all off. It's nuts. And the federal government, you know, Medicare does not have a budget to run ads to fight back against the insurance industry's ads. So we've got a real mess here. Quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. With higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR, all into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. It's accessible from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. You improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/Hartman with two N's. netsuite.com/Hartman. That's netsuite.com/Hartman.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Joseph in Bovee, Minnesota. Hey, Joseph, how's the COVID newsletter, the Substack newsletter doing?
It's doing well, thanks to your support.
Yeah, the name of it again is what?
Dr. Joe's COVID and Science Newsletter.
Thank you. Yes, I subscribe to it and I read it. So, but I knew it was a long name. But what did you call about, Joe?
Well, yesterday a brand new study came out, and it's the first of its kind to show how the COVID infection affects the host chromatin structure, which is basically chromatin, that's your genes inside the cell.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the first of its kind. And the thing that's really scary about it is it's going in and rewiring your genes to inhibit any interferon response, which is basically your immune system. It tells the immune system, go away, we don't need you. And then it's promoting another antibody that just explodes your inflammation. And finally, there's suggestions that it's re-manipulating the architecture in such a way that there's a latency involved before you see the effects of the disease.
Hmm.
So this is a scary study. And until we get our transmission under control, you know, let's limit our transmission so this thing can't mutate. Because the new mutations that are occurring are not in the spike protein anymore. They're in the body of the virus. And that's what the body of the virus is going after now. It's finding a new way to promote itself,
basically. To get around your immune system. That's not good news, Joseph. I mean, it's further suggests that we should all continue to be vigilant. I mean, you know, knock wood. In fact, today I got my, you know, when the bivalent booster came out, it's been 6 months, and so I'm getting my booster shot, my second bivalent booster this afternoon. Louise and I are going to the pharmacy this afternoon. We have an appointment to get boosted. And so in fact, I didn't even know I could legally do this until I saw an article about it in the New York Times a couple days ago, or maybe it was in your newsletter, Joseph. I immediately, as soon as I figured out, hey, it's been 6 months and I can do this, I went online and made an appointment with my pharmacy. So. Joseph, thank you. Thanks for the call and thanks for the information. It's good to hear from you. Seth in Christiansburg, Virginia. Hey, Seth, what's on your mind today?
I have a severe mental illness that's medically treated, and I've been all through the mental health system, and I've got some things to say about what's good and what to look for those that are families that are mentally ill.
Okay, go for it.
The first thing is called the PACT program, P-A-C-T, which is a program of assertive community treatment. It's extremely comprehensive. I think it's in half of the states in the U.S. And if you are a family member of the mentally ill, it's be very wise to help petition to get PACT in your state. It's comprehensive, reduces hospitalization, homelessness, and incarceration for the general public because people are checked up on frequently. It would reduce violence due to mental illness. Mm-hmm. And I've got a plug for benefits that you can look forward to if you have mental illness, and particularly if your family wants to follow up, which is SSI, or SSDI, or you can get both.
Right, Social Security Disability Insurance. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And you can call 1-800-MEDICARE to find provider such as United Healthcare that is an adjunct to that.
Okay.
And the service by Medicare is offered to anyone who wants to call in to find out what their best provider is. Mm-hmm. And again, I promote United Healthcare. They're very comprehensive and they really do a really good job.
Good.
Also included are housing vouchers, SNAP benefits, heating and cooling benefits, which should be in every state. Mm-hmm. I want to mention that there's a disease of the that is coincident with the with mental health called agnosia, A-G-N-O-S-I-A, and what that means is that the mentally ill client does not understand what is wrong with them. Mm-hmm. It's very dangerous because it creates a revolving door in the hospitals because you can't study your own existence. It doesn't work that way. So the trick is that for the general public that may have a mental illness, you want to listen to your family and friends who can visually see what's going on and acquiesce to a evaluation, which is harmless. Either they're going to tell you need help or you don't. But the key to overcoming agnosia is making sure you listen to family and friends. Right. If you've got lots of family and friends that are saying what's the problem, just get checked out.
Pay attention to the feedback. Great stuff, Seth. Great stuff.
Yeah.
I need to move along to other callers here, but thank you for, and you know, we can continue the conversation in the future, but thank you so much for sharing that with us. It's great stuff. I truly appreciate it. Mike in Fulton, Missouri. Hey, Mike, what's on your mind today? Mike in Fulton, Missouri, listening on SiriusXM. Going once, going twice. Jordan in Madison, Wisconsin. Hey, Jordan, what's on your mind today?
Hi, Mark. Thanks for the call.
Hey, Jordan.
Hey, Tom. So what's on my mind is, so I'm from Wisconsin, and recently, about a little over a week ago, the Republican legislator here lifted the ban on conversion therapy for people that are homosexual or transgender. And the reason why I bring that up is because I think it's bad policy for politicians to have any say as far as like mental health or medical health. Now, I get what you're saying as far as like a right to die. It sounds like it's, you know, like an unalienable right, which I'm totally for. But when you have politicians that can, you know, it's biased. It's what they think, if that makes sense.
Yeah, the whole gay conversion therapy thing is like, you know, super controversial, or it's no longer controversial, but, you know, back a decade or so ago, we did programs about this. It was, you know, it's really psychological abuse. It's a form of psychological torture, in fact, in my mind. And the American Psychological Association has, I believe, completely repudiated it. And I'm assuming the American Psychiatric Association has done the same. Having lifted that ban, I mean, maybe Michelle Bachmann's husband, who was, you know, one of the big gay conversion therapists in the state, will try to revive his practice, but, you know, God only knows. But I'm not holding my breath. But Jordan, thanks. Thanks for the information. Right. Of course, the Republicans are going to do that. Of course, they're going to do that. Speaking of morality, Missouri, another red state, another state that is controlled by Republicans. And I'm wondering how long after 2024 these Republicans are going to be able to hang on to these red states. I mean, they are making it hard for women. I mean, Wyoming just outlawed the abortion pill, mifepristone. And now Missouri just approved an anti-vaccination measure on Tuesday that, according to the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, quote, could tie the hands of health professionals to address future pandemics. Republican Representative Bill Hardwick of Waynesville, Missouri, proposed legislation that, quote, would bar, I'm quoting from the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, not from the law, would, quote, bar governments from being able to mandate a COVID-19 vaccine or potential future medical technologies. The measure would require private employers, including small business owners, to provide exemptions to any vaccine requirement if any employee has a sincere religious belief or concern about the health benefits of the vaccine. I run a small business. There are four of us in here right now. There's me and Sean running the board. Joyce is answering the phones. Nate's running the video. We work together, have for years. Sean's been with me more than 15 years, Nate more than a decade, Joyce for, I think, more than 5 years now. And, we're a team. We're like a family. And we're all well vaccinated because we care about each other. But if I had made the mistake of hiring some self-centered ass who came into the workplace and said, well, you know, I don't care if I'm sick and I'm not going to get vaccinated and I think this is all nonsense and so what if I show up with COVID? You know, I'd like to have the right to bounce them out, to fire them. And I think all of my fellow, workers here on this program would like to have a say in that, too. You know, demanding it. But hey, if we were doing this show from Missouri under this law, I would not have the ability to do that. That's bizarre. I mean, this is just bizarre. Ari in Eureka, California. Hey, Ari, what's on your mind today?
I think the whole death with dignity thing is part of the greater bodily autonomy question.
I agree, just like
that
abortion.
We seem to be wrestling with.
Yep.
Exactly. And thank you, the party of small government seems to want to expand government into our coffins and our uteruses. I mean, what's next?
Yeah.
And by the way, if you're banning books, you're on the wrong side of the argument.
Yes, you're on the wrong side of the national ethos, actually, I would say.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think it is very much a bodily autonomy issue. Another thing, you know, since we're kind of dealing with death here, not to be morbid, but here in Oregon, they just legalized composting human remains. Yeah, in other words, being buried without a coffin so that your body just goes back into the earth, you know, over a period of decades. I think that's kind of cool, too. It's frankly,
absolutely.
I mean,
I'd love to be recycled.
Yeah, exactly. And cremation requires, you know, enormous amounts of fossil fuels. On the other hand, even the recycling requires a graveyard, which, you know, occupies territory. So I'm ambivalent about it. I've told Louise and my kids that I don't care what you do with my body once I'm gone. I mean, you know, it's like.
But at least you could push up daisies, like literally.
Yeah, or feed them. I mean, you know, feed them because right. It's like, you know, dust thou art, to dust returneth. You know, was not spoken of the soul. Was that Emerson? No, that was Longfellow. Psalm of Life was that poem. Tell me not in mournful numbers, life is but an empty dream, and the soul is dead that slumbers, and things are not what they seem. Life is real. Like, oh, never mind. You don't want to hear the whole poem, but it's been my
I'm impressed.
It's been my favorite my whole life.
I just think it's part of that big question. And if we're not careful, we're not going to have any bodily autonomy at all.
Yeah, well, that's, you know, it seems like that's the direction the Republicans are going. And in that regard, I think they're just dancing to the tune of the extreme right wing of the Christian religions. There's some of the evangelical churches that are in with the Catholics on opposing death with dignity. Ari, thanks for the call. Great points all. Leslie in Central Square, New York. Hey, Leslie, thanks for watching us on YouTube. What's up?
I had the COVID.
You're over it? You're okay?
Yeah, I'm over it. I was in the hospital for probably 9 days.
Oh, man.
And when I was in there, I had a beautiful crew, man, nurses and stuff and everything. And they were very intelligent. You could talk to them. Of course, I was isolated, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Probably easier to talk to people under those conditions. And they were just awesome.
That's great.
That's great.
Have you gotten a bill yet, Leslie? I'm hearing that people are getting $10, $20, $50, $100,000 hospital bills after they get out after having COVID.
I'm on Medicare.
Oh, you're on Medicare. So you're in good shape. Okay, good. So, yeah. So what'd you call about, Leslie?
I told one of the nurses about the brainwashing of my dad, and she said, I'm going to go watch it on my break.
Ha!
So she goes and watches it. Yeah, she watched it on her break, and she says, that was great. And before I was done, most of the people in there had watched it.
That's incredible.
How about that?
That's great.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
I thought so.
So you're passing.
And they learned a lot. They learned a lot from it, boy.
Yeah. Well, Jen put together a hell of a movie, you know, The Brainwash of My Dad. It's a good one. It's an excellent one. Leslie, thanks a lot for sharing the story with us, and I'm glad that you're back among the land of the living. It's great to hear from you. Jose in Toledo, Ohio. Hey, Jose, thanks for watching us on Free Speech TV.
Everyone's talking about January 6th.
Hmm?
This country talks a lot of talk, but refuses to walk the walk. I mean, we talk liberty, we talk justice, but when it comes to them and we have to carry it out, no one wants to get any eggs out of their basket, you know?
Unless it's for rich white people.
Right.
Then we
right.
have a very highly functioning, you know, criminal justice system that's not overly punitive, that very rarely imprisons people, that right. does, you know, a lot of slap on the wrist kind of stuff. Rich white people,
jail, right?
Everything's good, right? But poor white people and people, regardless of wealth or status or station, who are not white, all bets are off.
And, you know, it just continued on internationally as an empire. Everything's okay as long as you're benefiting. The big guys are benefiting, and nothing else matters. So it's not an insightful comment, just something I think, you know.
Yeah. Well, the United States is an empire right now, and, you know, and we rarely ignore it, and we never discuss it. And we talked about this one day last week, that, you know, is it time, in my opinion, it's long past time for America to do what the United Kingdom did after World War I, which is say, you know, this whole kingdom thing, you know, it's nice sounding, but in practical reality, it is a pain in the butt. And we're just not going to do it anymore. You know, we're gonna let those countries go. And you know, having over 700 military bases around the world is pretty damn breathtaking. You know, it's time to wake up. Jose, thanks a lot for the call. It's great to hear from you. And thanks for watching us there in Toledo.
Hey, I'm Jamie.
And I'm Justina.
And we're the hosts of Just So You Know, a podcast where we get to the bottom of suspicious stories and outright lies we're being told by companies that profit off of animals.
You think Elon Musk is shady? Wait until you hear our episode about his sinister brain experiments.
First he ruined Twitter, now he's coming for your actual brain.
No.
We've also got one about that time I stormed the runway at New York Fashion Week to protest Coach's leather handbags.
Yeah, I heard they weren't happy about that.
I couldn't tell you. They're not talking to me at the moment.
And we're just getting started. In the coming weeks, we're going to blow the lid off of everything from shady pet dealers to monkeys held hostage by coconut milk companies to the astonishing secret behind the no animals were harmed message you see at the end of movies.
And so much more. We'll hope you join us for this surprisingly fun journey full of strange characters, secretive companies, and a whole world of stuff they really don't want you to know.
Subscribe to Just So You Know wherever you get your podcasts and look for our new episodes every Thursday. Just So You Know is a PETA production.
Over at theliberalpatriot.substack.com, this piece that John Halpin wrote, his Substack newsletter, titled In Defense of Being Alone. And what he pointed out is that looking at Americans 15 and older, the number of hours per week that people spend alone, way back in 2013 was, you know, about an hour a week. I mean, people spent very little time, frankly, every week all alone. And it went up to by 2017, 2018, it had gone up to around 4 hours a week of alone time. And then, of course, the pandemic really jacked it up to a little over 8 hours a week of alone time. But that trend seems to be holding. It held into 2021, around 9 hours a week of alone time. And he makes the point that, you know, when mass shootings occur or people behave in just weird manners, very often we call them loners or social people who have experienced social isolation. And the profiles of a lot of mass killers and extreme weirdos, he notes, fit into that category. But on the other hand, he says, according to new census data on time use examined by Bruce Ward of the Washington Post, Americans across demographic lines are spending more and more time alone. However, you know, what if the increase in choosing to be alone isn't necessarily a sign that the world is falling apart? Maybe it's not even a sign that there's massively increased use of social media that causes people to just stay alone and stare at their screen all the time. What if it's a sign, he asks, what if it's rather a sign of a rational action in defense of individuality and personal freedom in a world of increasingly oppressive social groups? And he talks about how from 2014 to 2021, you saw this dramatic rise in social media use, but also this steady stream of disruptive political events. And persuasion, he says, was superseded by rhetorical pounding. And so a lot of people just said, you know, this Trump craziness or this, you know, the so-called cancel culture, whatever you want to, you know, all across the political spectrum, all across the social spectrum, people just were like, I'm not ready for that. I'm going to check out. You know, I can tell you from my own personal experience in my own personal life, and I say this with Louise's permission. In fact, we discussed it this morning when we were putting the show together. I have never in my life really wanted to be alone. I mean, I can do it. I don't find myself uncomfortable when I'm alone, although I tend to occupy my mind. I usually read when I'm alone. But, you know, it doesn't bother me, but I don't crave it. But my wife has, since she was a kid, has craved alone time. And, you know, I don't know if this is something genetic or if it has to do with, you know, her childhood or what. It doesn't really matter. I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I think it's, you know, some people are just, you know, they like alone time. She was telling me this morning how after 15 years or thereabouts, you know, into our marriage, well, this is maybe more like 15 or 17 or 18 or 20 years into our marriage, there was a 3-week period that she remembers really vividly. When I was like off in Uganda doing, you know, international relief work, and our oldest had gone to college. Our second child was in Germany. Our second child was in France, and our youngest was in Finland, in both cases staying with friends. In fact, our middle child was staying with Jay and Jack Riley, Jay, the musician who wrote and performs the music that's the intro to this show. They lived in Paris. And our youngest was staying with one of her classmates whose parents were in Finland. She was an exchange student. And so Louise had, and I was gone. She had 3 whole weeks where she was literally all alone in the house, and it was when she wasn't running a business, because she and I had been taking turns running our businesses for years and years and years, and how she just savored that. And, you know, even now, you know, I come home from doing this show, and I go up to my office, and I spend from 1 o'clock in the afternoon to 5 o'clock in the afternoon every day writing the next day's op-ed for the Hartman Report, and intentionally leaving Louise alone, because she just likes that quiet time, that alone time. She's a very, you know, a person who likes that. I don't know if you want to call that introversion or what you call it, but, you know, there's nothing wrong with that. But, you know, he's speculating in this article, you know, perhaps a rising number of Americans experienced this social group tyranny over the past decade and decided, I'm out. Why go through the pain and anxiety of capitulating to dogmatic people who dominate group environments when you could be on your own doing what you want, thinking about politics and the world in your own way, or just doing nothing and taking the dog for a walk or reading a book or listening to music? Life is too short to put up with annoying behavior from other people. And he ends, you know, introverts of the world unite, but not for too long or with too many people. I love it. But I think that there's a lot to be said for, you know, respecting this spectrum of introversion and extroversion. These are words that were invented by Carl Jung back in the last decades of the 19th or early decades of the 20th century. And his idea was that fundamentally or originally, I mean, the words introversion, extroversion, or introvert and extrovert have gone through many permutations over the decades. But, you know, originally, basically that extroverts were people who defined themselves by how other people react to them. And so they constantly need to be interacting with other people to really know who they are. And that introverts were people who defined themselves by some inner definition that they were quite confident of, and they didn't need the validation or external validation or representation of who they are. Now, you know, this was Carl Jung's original idea. As I said, you know, since then, the words have been changed and the meanings have been changed and fine-tuned and tweaked and whatnot. But just, you know, I think that COVID and Donald Trump, and I'd love to hear your take and thoughts on this, that the Trump presidency, the insane damage that did to the United States and continues to do to the United States, but the wounding that we experienced, the psychic, the psychological, the spiritual wounding that this country experienced from the Donald Trump presidency and the insane asses that he brought along with him, wackadoodles who were on TV every day just spouting the most insane nonsense, and of course the toxic nonsense, you know, the racist, the homophobia, the hatred, the anti-Semitism. We had that, and then the fourth year of that, the worst pandemic in 100 years, and Trump's bungling of it led to 1 million dead Americans. Over at Daily Kos, they had a questionnaire asking, you know, what's your take on COVID? Are you to the point where, you know, okay, I've had it, I'm over it, I'm back to normal, or have you avoided it? And you're, damn it, I'm not going to get it. Or are you somewhere in between? You know, where are you on this? And, you know, I answered that, you know, I haven't gotten it. Louise hasn't gotten it. And damn it, we're not going to get it. We still wear masks everywhere we go. You know, Sean was telling me about a friend of hers. May I say this? Who has had COVID for the fourth time. It's a vaccinated person. But, you know, each time you get it, it increases the risk that you're going to get long COVID or that you're going to get a stroke or a heart attack or some terrible consequence from it. And her friend, having it now the fourth time, is having it the worst time. I don't want to go through that. That seems crazy to me. So we've got these external forces, right? The insanity of Trump, the danger of a deadly disease, literally a deadly disease. I mean, it's killed a million of our fellow humans, fellow Americans. It's killed, you know, probably 10 or 20 million of our fellow humans around the planet, probably more than that, actually. Is that driving a new norm for behavior? Or is that allowing people to step back a little bit from the frenetic electronic pace of, you know, watching our televisions and listening to radio and going to work and you know, work from home for a while or take some time off from work or just kind of recenter or reevaluate, you know, what does life mean? Why am I here? What should I be doing? What's it all about? And come to new conclusions. I mean, there are all these fascinating articles that have been written, you know, many of them in like business journals, like the Financial Times is all over this. At least once a week, there's some new article about the new work environment or how young people in America, in particular millennials, have a different understanding of their relationship to work. Is that the result of just this experiment with COVID or this experience of COVID? Or is that the result of the 80-year cycle swinging around? That this new generation is like the generation that came up that, you know, during FDR's presidency? I don't know. I don't have any easy answers for this stuff, but I find it just fascinating to look at. Think about. Chaz in Lakewood, Washington. Hey, Chaz, what's on your mind today?
So I've been living alone for about 25 years. It's one of the topics you brought up, mm-hmm. You know, except for raising a teenager, and any single parent will tell you, you may as well be living alone. Now, I consider, and the thing is that the first year is tough, no question about it. But if you make that second year, man, you may never live with anyone again. Because it is just great. You can have visitors if you want or not. You can go out if you want or not. I consider myself an extrovert, but like recently I went to a Thanksgiving dinner with friends. And after a couple hours, it's like, you know what? I'm ready to go home to my cat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Anyhow, no, but I'll just admit, I will have to admit, huh?
I said I'd get it. I totally get it. I know people very much like that. I mean, it's not quite how I'm wired, but I'm halfway there.
Yeah. Well, okay.
I'm okay just being Louise. You know, it's that's you know, we spent the whole 2 years of COVID, you know, without seeing any other human beings. I mean, even working from home, and it was fine with me. I could have done that for years and years. It was not fine with her, but it was fine with me.
You did your job raising the kids, and now it's their turn.
Yeah.
But, okay, all right. I'll have to admit, it's tougher when Tom Hartman takes a lot of days off. So I hope you're set for a while, Professor.
Well, we're going to take a week off around Christmas. But other than that, everything's good. So get ready, Chaz. Chaz, thank you for the call. Elaine in Hollywood, Florida. Hey, Elaine, what's up?
Bowling Alone, my favorite book in the world, really, mm-hmm. as a volunteer doing this. I happen to be a lawyer and a state rep, but I really, volunteering and the lack of that cohesiveness, everybody should read. I bought 20 copies. I gave them to all my friends. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they read them.
Yeah.
But I just wanted to mention that he has a supplement, Robert Putnam.
Supplement
is called, oh my God, Better Together. And his first one, he's showing like 12 or 15.
Banded Together, you said, is the sequel? Better Together. I remember that. Elaine, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. In the meantime, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires you. Yes, you. Participate, please. There are things you can do. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow. So be good to yourself and the people around you.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit tomhartman.com.